From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in 1825 with the opening of the Erie Canal. And as the director of the New York State Canal Corporation, Brian Stratton, recently wrote in the Democrat and Chronicle, the U.S. was still experiencing growing pains at the time, but Stratton writes that the canal allowed an agrarian nation to become an industrial superpower, and it allowed Rochester to transform from frontier outpost when the canal opened to the nation's largest producer of flour within just a decade. This year marks the bicentennial of the canal's groundbreaking, and there are events planned across the state. This hour, we'll take a tour through history, certainly. We'll also look to the future, and maybe someday the canal will even be able to transport massive fermentation tanks for beer. Maybe it will be a news story. But seriously, though, what is the canal's future? What should it look like? How often do you use it? My guests this hour include the director of the New York State Canal Corporation, Brian Stratton, who's come all the way from Albany. I mean, I was going to ask you how you traveled here. I assume you drove by car. But
not by canal, because the speed limit along the canal is only 7 miles per hour.
Yeah, that would take you a while.
We would have had to start out last week.
Thanks for being here. It's nice to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Also here is Beth Teal, who is the chair of Cornhill Navigation. And Beth, why don't you tell our listeners what Cornhill Navigation is?
Cornhill Navigation is the nonprofit organization that for the last 26 years has been taking people on boat cruises along the Erie Canal and the Genesee River. And we currently operate the Sand Patch out of Shane Place in Pittsburgh. And I imagine almost every fourth grader out there has at some point been on the Sand Patch or the late great sister ship of Sam, the Mary Jemison, which was downtown.
My five-year-old wants his second ride on the Sand Patch coming up here. So Reese is at camp. He's not listening, but soon. So thank you for being here.
Good.
Scott Winter is executive director of the Fairport Parent and Partnership for a Better Community. Welcome back to the program. You came with stuff.
Yes.
Lots of stuff.
Yes, Fairport Brewing's kombucha product.
I asked him if it's going to explode in the studio this hour. You said probably not.
No, it's only lightly fermented and so therefore slightly carbonated.
Well, thank you for this. And, it's payola. I can't accept it. But thank you for being here. Heidi McPherson is a president of the College of Brockport, who was just mentioning before the program began, the only SUNY on the canal. Is that right?
We are the only SUNY on the canal, and we're proud of our long history of working with the canal. And we actually think we're partly there because of the canal.
All right. Why would you say, what would be the reason that you could even trace just the fact that you're there and you exist there because of the canal? What's that connection?
There are really three reasons. Before the canal was put in, Clarkson was really the town of choice at that point, and Brockport came into being and came into livelihood because of the canal. The people who made their money on the canal helped to support the First Academy because they were part of the decision to make education part and central of this area. And then we actually have some of the buildings. The original buildings were built from quarried stone from the canal. So we actually have quite a lot of history there.
Well, there is a pile of events coming up here. In fact, hundreds of events happening all across the state this summer. The best information, the easiest way to do it is just eriecanal.com, I think. But, Brian, where would you send people? And let's kind of talk a little bit about what's coming up here.
Well, they can go on to our Canal Corporation website, nycanals.com. We also have a bicentennial website, which we're also going to be talking about the forum on Friday, and that would be nycanals200.com, and you can click on that for more information about the bicentennial events coming up.
And when he's talking about Friday, this Friday at 10 a.m. at the Strong Museums Theater, it is open to the public, but they do ask that you RSVP there. So RSVP at nycanals200.com/Rochester. Easy to find, nycanals200.com/Rochester. 10 a.m. at the Strong Museum Theater. What's the focus going to be?
Well, really, we want to take a look. This is the bicentennial of the Erie Canal 200 years ago on July 4th when the first shovel was put into ground to begin to build the canal in Rome on July 4th, 1817. And now we're entering into our third century of operation on the canal. And so we want to take a look at what the canal has meant for Rochester and the Finger Lakes region, but also what it can be. And we have a panel that is going to talk about a lot of things going on in and around the canal, both in the Rochester region and in the Finger Lakes region, that really point to a very exciting and essential economic future for the canal.
All right, so that is 10 a.m. on this Friday, and then I'll just go and kind of go around the table before we dig into history and then look at the future. And listeners, by the way, you want to call the program, Brian is here to take all of your complaints or questions. let's have a robust discussion on if we're maximizing the canal, if you use it, if your family uses it, and what you think the future can be for it. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Beth, this summer, what's Cornhill Navigation looking forward to when it comes to events and activity there?
The next thing that we are doing is bringing the Sand Patch downtown to help celebrate the 200th anniversary of the Erie Canal in conjunction with the event on Friday. So we're going to have some special VIP tours through Brian, and then public tours, cruises at 4 o'clock, and then a music tour at 6:30. So
On Friday,
downtown at the Cornhill Landing. And then the next event for us is the Votilla, which I think has been referred to before, but that is the celebration.
We're talking about it on this program tomorrow.
Tomorrow, perfect.
Yes, we are.
Well, the Susan B. Anthony House is using the Sand Patch to float from Shane Place in Pittsburgh to downtown, so we'll be part of the great celebration of that as well.
And if you still not sure what Votilla is, where New York is commemorating 100 years since women had the right to vote, and we'll talk much more about that tomorrow on this program. So, Scott, for you, what's on the calendar that is top of mind when it comes to events, activities, etc.?
Well, we just wrapped up yesterday having 663 cyclists and their support crew, about 730 people, spend the night in Fairport as part of the Cycle the Erie program that's going on from Buffalo to Albany this week. Terrific event, great turnout. Coming up, Votilla, and of course, Music Fest in August and Oktoberfest in October, all of which is preceded by our world-famous Canal Days. So
very good.
We maximize the canal.
And Heidi, for you at the College of Brockport, anything stand out this summer here?
We are so fortunate to be so connected with our village. And every Thursday, we have summer serenades down at the Welcome Center along the canal, which are free concerts for anyone and everyone. There's dancing, there's singing, and there's all sorts of fun to be had. The college itself is also doing some real planning about how we can ensure that the canal is a great place to be. We're looking at new work to open up a pathway and to ensure that there are more opportunities for the arts as well as some research along the canal.
All right. Well, I want to turn to Brian Stratton because I want to kind of talk about what he wrote in the Democrat and Chronicle about our history. And I hope, Megan Mack, producer, tell me if I'm wrong, if I'm remembering. At the end of last year, we had a fun little hour on this program where we asked people who teach history or historians, people in different historical backgrounds, to kind of do a what if. What if one little thing had sort of pivoted differently in history? And I think it was Christine Radarsky, historian of the city of Rochester, who said, without the canal, who knows what we are? Yeah, and that's so Megan is telling me, yes, I actually remembered that correctly. So there we go. Thank you for that, Christine. Brian, you wrote about that. You said essentially in a decade we had become the largest flour producer in the state, mm-hmm. and that you go from frontier outpost to, you know, a real sort of booming town that, with an industry, and you're putting that right on the back of the canal. Yeah?
I think that's the same story, not only for Rochester, but for Syracuse, Buffalo, Albany, Schenectady, Utica, all along the spine of what is today's New York State thruway, where the canal ran, you had an explosion as these what were frontier outposts became population centers, and certainly Rochester owes that early growth to the canal system. Now, had the canal not come through Rochester, there was a earlier plan historically to just bring it up to Lake Ontario and go across the lake over to Buffalo, but that didn't pan out, and therefore we have the canal that we have today. And in fact, the canal that runs through much of the Rochester area through Fairport, Pittsford, Brockport, Spencerport is an enlargement of the historic Erie Canal.
So there's a little bit of history. And Scott, you know, now here, you said you're using it as much as you can here.
Oh, yeah.
How much of an economic asset is it, do you think, right now?
Tremendous. And I've been in Fairport for 12 years. The program I run has been around 17 years. The Fairport Parent and Partnership for Better Community is a Main Street program for redevelopment of community business centers, basically. It's a mature program at this point. So we don't get into a lot of the tactical stuff a younger program, such as the one they have in Albion or Lyons, is doing now. But that program, as well as some visionaries way back in the 1970s, government leaders in Fairport who formed an IDA and a URA and took federal dollars and really completely remade Fairport's downtown. And in so doing, we lost our 19th century commercial look that all the other canal towns have, but we gained a very distinctive look, architecturally speaking, that also, as they built these structures, they embraced the canal. Historically, the canal was the part, it was the back of the house. It was the business end of things, and don't let the women or children go there. But when we recently...
Isn't that strange in retrospect?
But anyway. Well, if you understand the type of people, you know, who were... And the culture of the times, which was, you know, Victorian era, it's not so strange if you have context for that. But what they did in the 1970s and 80s in rebuilding the Central Business District, especially in the South Bank of the canal in Fairport, was to embrace the canal. And philosophically, we view the canal as our second Main Street. And when you come to Fairport, you'll know on any given day, yeah, we're a festival town, but the organic activity that happens every day in Fairport is... incredible, just the activity that's there all the time as a result of, you know, actually going on 40 years of concerted, sustained, incremental economic development efforts.
Can you answer a question that my son and I have had? Last summer, we were on a bridge across the canal on a bike ride, and there was a bird of prey that I was thrilled did not attack us. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. It was enormous.
Uh-huh.
What kind of bird of prey would that have been? It's like a falcon?
I am not an avian specialist.
Oh,
I really thought
I was going to get an answer. No, I didn't get a picture.
I owned a couple parrots once.
It was one of those things where you're walking by and it's kind of way up and it's looking at you and you're looking like, I'm not here to hurt you. You know, do not pick up my four-year-old and carry him off with you. And he just thought it was cool. Okay, well, maybe a caller will let me know.
All sorts of experiences on the canal.
Yeah, and it's certainly happened this time of year. I know that Beth Teal, who's the chair of Cornhill Navigation, says in, what, 26 years, you said?
That's right, yes.
You've seen a lot of change. Kind of give me a little tour of history in 26 years for your organization.
Okay. Our organization actually encompasses both the Genesee River and the Erie Canal. So when Ted Curtis founded the organization, he was concerned with the quality and the appreciation of our waterways in general. And so if you remember the Genesee River in my lifetime, there were commercial buildings lining the Main Street Bridge. You had no sense that there was this mighty river running through downtown Rochester. And it was also an active disposal place for Eastman Kodak Company and other large corporations. So it was toxic for a large expanse. So Ted thought, rightly so, that the way to get people to care about their waterway is to put them in the middle of it. And that required a boat. So Ted and his friends commissioned the Sampatch, which is a replica canal boat, and accommodates 49 people. We started out in Cornhill Landing on the Genesee River back when it was just a dirt parking lot, and we had a little shack. And then when the construction started for today's Cornhill Landing, the Sampatch moved out to Shane Place in Pittsburgh. And so we've been in Pittsburgh for about 15 years, and that's where I see the dramatic change going on. Fairport realized the potential of the Erie Canal way before any other community did. But now Pittsburgh has embraced it, and it's a vital, energetic, family-friendly, fun place to be. So Sampatch sells out virtually every cruise just for people wanting to come along and have fun and get a unique way to learn about New York State history and all of the exciting intellectual and historic things that happened only because of the canal's presence. So we go through a lock, go through Lock 32, and then come back on through it again. And there are so many people in the world who've never had a chance to go through a lock, and we can provide that. And it's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that if I was reading correctly, let's see here. Saturday, staff from the Canal Corporation are going to show off the mechanics involved in operating the Erie Canal with an interactive demonstration of a model lock. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have a model lock that's probably about the size of the table that we're sitting around, and it actually fills with water in the same way that our valves operate. Lock 32 and the other 56 locks on our canal system.
Was there actually a mule named Sal?
That's a myth, but I'm going to say yes.
Yes. Keep it well all weekend long. I'm reading guests can get up close to a mule. This mule is named Sal. Play the spoon, sing along to songs inspired by the canal, which we mercifully did not include in today's broadcast. But no, I mean, we all sort of grew up in school singing those songs here, and so there's a lot going on, and you're getting a sense for some of that. I wanted to ask Heidi McPherson if Heidi, Fairport's getting a lot of credit for being a little forward thinking with the canal. What happened in Brockport? When did that sort of come along a little bit more swiftly?
You know, what's interesting is we've looked back through the college archives about what the college was saying about the canal, and we've had wonderful stories from the 1930s. We have film footage of students on the canal. We actually also found out in 1970 that our students had a funeral service for the canal, because at that time they were concerned about the pollution of the canal, and they said, we've turned our back on the canal. Over the last several years, we've been looking at how we can reintegrate the canal into not only the village and the college life, but also things that we would do with the students. So we've just developed we're in the process of developing a new lab, an interdisciplinary lab on the canal that is focusing on the history of the canal. It's focusing on the arts of the canal, and we're also looking at biology and environmental sciences so that our students can have real-world experience in thinking about what the canal means to them and what the canal can actually mean to their education.
That was in the 70s they did the funeral?
1970.
Students have always been doing interesting sort of environmental activism and demonstrations, huh? Interesting stuff.
Yes, absolutely. And it was wonderful to go back to the archives and to see how often the canal appears in the history of the college.
Hmm. Again, listeners, I'm going to start reading some of your emails and comments via Twitter and email. And if you want to call the program as we talk history and future of the canal, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Brian, I have to ask you about the whole thing with the beer tanks, because it became this wonderful marketing tool for just about everybody involved. Everybody had to be there with Genesee, with the beer, saluting. It was a master marketing move here. And these days, to be fair, that's more of an outlier in terms of commercial activity and transport on the canal. I mean, could we see more of that kind of thing?
On-demand basis, really. In the case of North American breweries, that was the only vehicle that they had to move these gigantic tanks. They could not be trained. They could not be highwayed. Maybe through the Air Force, they could have been loaded upon a massive C-5A. But then there's the transit route from the airport to the brewery. So they did exactly what the canal was made for, and that is moved by canal for large freight. And these tanks, 12 of them in all, that made the trip up the Hudson into the canal and to Rochester came, and they were just massive, and just people loved them along the whole way. We don't see a lot of that, but there are certainly companies along the canal moving freight. GE back in Schenectady is moving turbines and transformers. We're moving a large amount of stone down the Sham Plain Canal down to New York City for the construction industry, but largely it is a tourism based asset for navigation. We talk about the economic impact, nearly $400 million a year. spent along the canal and the Canalway Trail for tourism spending. But the economic impact of what the canal is also used for, which people may not know, is irrigation for farms, irrigation for golfing, hydropower. We have 27 hydroelectric power facilities along the canal, providing power to some 53,000 customers. Even Oak Hill Country Club gets their water, some of their water, at least out of the canal to hydrate the fairways and the greens, and they have for more than 80 years. So there's something you may have not known.
I definitely did not know that. Let me grab our first phone call in Shortsville. This is Susan on the lines. Go ahead, Susan.
Hi. Quick question. I was wondering, is there like a map online or something that shows where it's safe to put in canoes or kayaks, you know, small watercraft, as opposed to where you'd be, you know, competing with big boats?
That's a very good question.
Susan, log on to canals.ny.gov, and I'm sure if you navigate that, you will find access points for your watercraft.
Okay, can you repeat that just a little slower?
Oh, I'm sorry. Canals, canals, .ny.gov.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. On Twitter, Andy writes to us and says, I use the canal for kayaking, calm, peaceful, lots of great little towns and wildlife and history. It's a gem for upstate New York. It's also a fantastic place to run. The old towpaths are nice and flat, generally soft gravel, great for beginners or distance runners. In Fairport, you got a nice wide path there. I mean,
yes.
There's people, bikes, runners. It's...
Yes, and portions are paved as well.
Yeah.
Between Parenton Park and the downtown Fairport area.
Yeah, so that's very nice. But Andy's also mentioning different towns on the trail, and I wanted to ask Brian before I get back to your phone calls, how often are you seeing people actually do sort of town tours, canal, you know, sort of like spending different days and... You know, is that a goal of the corporation,
and is that
happening?
Well, we're going to, at our forum on Friday, we will be also joined by Greg Marshall of Visit Rochester. And this region, the Rochester Finger Lakes, but particularly Brockport, Fairport, Pittsford region, is probably the hottest tourism region along the entire canal. And I think Greg will... You know, tell you about visitors not only from in-state, out-of-state, but also international visitors.
Absolutely.
Coming here.
I can build on that. Fairport alone sees between 2,500 and 3,000 boat nights paid in our inner harbor there between the two bridges. So for us, it's a very real economic engine, and many of our restaurants and pubs and things of that nature. This is their season. The 5-6 months that the canal is open is a critical period of time for our gift shops as well and our restaurants, as opposed to any other portion of the year.
And we had a listener named Alan who wrote in and wanted to know, is it still funded with thruway dollars? That's changed, isn't it, Brian?
That has changed. As of January 1st, we are part of the New York Power Authority, and it is funded through their power sales and the other revenue they take in, but we are no longer funded through thruway tolls, and that is a very active partnership. I mentioned 27 hydroelectric power facilities along the canal. Three of those are owned and operated by NYPA. NYPA is a water-based agency. We are a water-based agency. They are a tremendous engineering force, so we have a great partner in NYPA. And again, I would, you know, I would also focus on what the canal means economically for communities like Fairport, Brockport. $400 million a year in tourism spending, a $6.3 billion economic impact for hydropower, irrigation, farming. We're going to be hearing from the Orleans County Water and Soil District about more than 100 farmers directly on the canal that get water out of the canal. In fact, if you were to cruise along the canal through Orleans County and stand up on top of your boat where the canal is elevated. You would see soybean, you would see corn, you'd see apple, you'd see grapes, just a cornucopia of canal-watered crops.
I want to ask all of our guests and kind of go around the table to weigh in on some of this, because Alan's question about how the canal is funded reminded me of my greener days as a reporter in Rochester when I was assigned to kind of dig into canal funding. And I think it was 10 or 11 cents on the dollar of throughway dollars for a while went to the canal, thereabouts. That sound about right, Brian, for thereabouts? Something like that.
The budget during the canal years was about $85 million. So that, if you did the math on what the throughway took in, how much they were spending, I would argue that it was a bargain.
Well, see, that's what I want to talk about, is return on investment, because inevitably, when I did that kind of story, there were people who said, "Well, I don't want my throughway dollars funding this," or "I never used the canal." So what I want to ask is just, and I'll start with Scott and kind of go around the table, how you feel about return on investment in terms of the canal now, and if we could even imagine what happens otherwise. I don't mean to be apocalyptic here. The canal, I think, is going to be here for a while, and we might as well make great use of it. But if we chose not to, I don't even know what we would do logistically with it. It's kind of one of those things where it's kind of with us, so we might as well do something.
For many people in this region, myself included, it's in our fiber. I was born in Lockport, raised in Gasport, went to high school in Middleport, went to college at Brockport. I find after 20 years in the ad agency business or so, in this industry now for the past 15 years or so, this is something that cannot be seen as anything other than a positive for the entire state. Beyond all the facts and figures that Brian has articulated here, it also plays a role in flood control for the entire state. It's a very important system just on those levels. For us on a local level in Fairport, it is absolutely not only a national and international tourism draw, and we work diligently every day with Visit Rochester, with I Love New York. We have presence at major tourism shows in London and Montreal and Toronto to ensure that pipeline of visitors and travelers is always full and there's always more people coming. In 2 weeks, we're going to host 50 travel writers from around the United States in one group at one time. And they're going to come here to experience Rochester and the Finger Lakes. They're starting in Fairport as kind of the kickoff to the whole event. And this is an investment that our Merchants Association is making, putting some money into this, Visit Rochester. So my point here is, we talk a lot about state dollars. It's also about local commitment, and not only from local governments. Fairport's blessed with an industrial development agency that helps. It's also about local entrepreneurs and businessmen such as Tim Garman and Fairport Brewing Company. And while it's a tremendous brewery that has turned around a historic property and become the catalyst for development on an entire end of Main Street that didn't have that kind of catalyst, his product has expanded into this fermented tea line that has gotten so successful. It is now expanding into a separate company. They spun it off last week. They're leasing new space to expand their production. Wegmans is distributing it. It can't keep up. But, without the community commitment, our IDA was involved in the initial seeding of Fairport Brewing Company. None of this would have been able to happen. The other thing that that Fairport Brewing was the first of was brewery. We have a second brewery. Fairport's Triphammer Beer Works is being distributed now regionally by Wright Beverage, a very successful product line. And Iron Smoke Whiskey, distilling whiskey right in the village. These are all very locally based entrepreneurial ventures that had local support as well as state support. And I think, is key. It's not always top down. It has to happen at the local level. There has to be commitment at the local level, and it has to be, you have to go in with a notion, it has to be a sustained incremental approach. There's no magic bullets here. This is something that has to be done over an extended period of time.
All right, Heidi McPherson, what do you think?
Well, the vision of the Brockport College is to build meaningful lives and vibrant communities. And I can't think of a better way to do that than to capitalize on the canal. The canal has alongside it bars and restaurants and shops where our students work and our students play. We have the opportunity for our students to run along the canal, to have their fitness taken care of, to bike along the canal, and to row along the canal. We are working with our village at the moment on a boathouse. We're hoping to have that located on the college campus, and we are looking at all the ways in which we can partner. I think without the canal, we wouldn't have Brockport, and we wouldn't have the vibrancy and the life that we have currently in the village.
Okay. Beth, what do you think?
I think we've forgotten the massive potential of duck food and the great amount that is distributed, at least in Pittsburgh, I'm sure in Fairport.
I don't even
too.
Want to think about my annual duck food budget. I didn't want to think about it.
It's amazing. Fat little ducks out there.
Yeah.
But as we look at the development of Pittsburgh and the way it has expanded, parking is an issue. It's a great, wonderful problem to have. Too many people coming. You got to get there early to get a parking place. Pittsburgh is addressing that over time as well. The restaurants and the breweries are creating Erie Canal-themed beer, Erie Canal-themed food. And so there's just a real joyousness about it all that wasn't there 10 years ago, wasn't there 15 years ago. And the piece that's missing in this community, though, is the downtown Rochester piece. The Genesee River is a very important part of the Erie Canal system, and without having a boat downtown that the public can access, there has been a real void in not just local use of the waterway, but other boaters don't feel comfortable coming down and docking at a perfectly nice docking space at Cornhill Landing. So there needs to be the catalyst to bring a boat downtown, and that's why Cornhill Navigation is committed to getting a boat downtown as early, I hope, as next fall.
You think that'll happen?
We intend for it to happen.
You mean next fall, 2018?
2018, yes, okay. Not this fall.
Okay, very good. And Brian, this is your stock and trade defending return on investment here, but this is way too much of a softball. But go ahead, I'll give you the floor as well.
Well, let me just say I am so proud of all of our panelists because I didn't write any of their stuff.
Yeah,
and it comes right from their heart. This is a tremendous region, and I think if folks want to understand firsthand from our panelists Friday just what the canal is doing today, not only in the Finger Lakes region but statewide, they should come to our panel discussion at the Strong Museum, the Strong National Museum of Play, and they can do that by going to nycanals200.com/Rochester and clicking on RSVP. Who is not here at the table, who you will hear from Friday, and Dr. McPherson is our panel moderator, and she's going to keep everyone in shape and also talk more about what the university is doing. Will be the City of Rochester planner Tom Hack, who is going to talk about the plans to rebuild the West Genesee River Wall along Cornhill Landing, which is a lovely canal side neighborhood. We're also going to hear from Tim Garman at Fairport Brewing, who has told me that he wants to find a way to use water from the Erie Canal in his next beer. So we're going to hear more about that, and hopefully he has a very tasty plan for
a Canal PA.
A Canal PA. There's a marketing slogan. Brett Costello is also going to be here from Citygate, the developer of Citygate and The Reserve in Brighton, two beautiful communities. We're going to be soon having our first REI store in upstate New York along the canal, and REI has come to Rochester to be on the canal. And you'll see many of their programs, whether it's kayaking demonstrations, canoeing, is going to be integrated from the REI store right along the canal, and they are actually right next to the canal. Greg is going to be here Greg Marshall, to be able to talk about tourism. And then we will have Dennis Kirby manager of the Orleans Soil and Water Conservation District, to talk about how much farmers in Orleans County depend upon the canal. Maybe not so much this year because we've had a lot of rain, but in hot, dry summers, it is absolutely essential. And so if folks really want to know just what they're getting back out of this 540-mile New York State canal system, we hope that they will come and join us Friday.
Friday, 10 a.m. at the Strong Museums Theater. It's open to the public, but again, register an RSVP there at nycanals200.com/Rochester. Caleb in Pittsford, Robert in Fairport, you're on the phone. We're taking our only break of the hour. We're going to come right back, take some of your phone calls after this break as we talk the present, past, and future of the canal system here. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, maybe my favorite comedian in the country today, and you've heard him a lot on This American Life and NPR, it's Mike Birbiglia. He's coming to Rochester, but first he's my guest, and he and I will discuss how we both have the exact same sleep disorder. It's true. Then in our second hour, we're talking about Votilla, 100 years since New York gave women the right to vote. We get you ready with history and a look at celebrations. Connections, I'm Evan Dawson. We were just remarking on all the good coffee that's on the canal. Fairport has Fairpour,
right,
which is awesome. You can get a great cortado there. And Mellomug, and shout out to Matt Gridley and the wonderful people at Mellomug in Bushnell's Basin, is really doing fantastic stuff there with a great community feel, great ethos there. It's just very comfortable and really good coffee, too. So that's exciting for us coffee snobs like me. I want to grab a couple of your phone calls. Caleb in Pittsford. Go ahead, Caleb.
Hi. A friend asked me recently if people swim in the Erie Canal and if it's allowed. And I realized I've never seen anybody swim in it. And is it legal? And if not, has it ever been a problem? And it's so impressive that there are so many great things happening on our canal. What about swimming?
Thank you, Caleb.
Very interesting. We don't encourage swimming, but we don't discourage it either. It's not it wouldn't be a beach, but you know, if you love the canal, the best way to be up close is to be in the canal, right?
Just last week, I saw three kids. I would say are tweeners, and they were jumping from right near the Main Street lift bridge, which in all my years in Fairport I'd never seen before. And it brought back fond memories.
Which they're allowed to do?
Well, technically it is discouraged. I suppose if the local constable had seen it, he would have put a stop to it. But
you know, I should probably qualify my comment and say that it's probably not a good idea because you really can't see to the bottom, so you don't know what's down there, whether there's a submerged log or whatnot.
The great urban myths. I can speak from experience of many years jumping in the canal and gas board as a kid. We all survived. No one perished. But I wouldn't recommend it. I don't think it's that much cleaner today than it was in the late 1970s. So.
Okay. Well, but Caleb, that's probably why you haven't seen it. It's not encouraged. It's not discouraged. And now, thanks to connections, there's going to be an epidemic of swimmers in the canal.
Well, actually, in Fairport, it's always been ongoing. Most little canal communities, they call it. Interesting anecdote. I grew up on the west end of the canal in Niagara County. We called it bridge jumping because you were jumping from a bridge.
This is like the last thing Brian wanted to talk about. I'm so glad we're doing
Fairport,
this.
In Fairport, they call it scum jumping because of the quality of the water. And there's actually a Fairport Brewing Company beer called Scum Jumper IPA, I believe it is. Yeah. So just
wow.
I brought it home there, Evan, didn't I?
Yes.
I did.
Right. This is why you came from Albany. Is that correct, Brian?
Well, in
canal
Albany,
canal lore, Brian.
In Albany, the Erie Canal is actually the Hudson River and the Mohawk River, which people do swim in.
Yes.
So when you get out here, you have, as I said earlier in the show, this is an enlargement of the original Erie Canal from the 1800s, but the water flows through. So it's more of a swimming mecca per se. In the riverine sections and in the lakes.
Right.
Point is, be careful, everybody. Have fun. Be careful.
All the rules apply.
Robert in Fairport next on the phone. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I had a question. First on that the scum jumping thing. I actually live not too far from Thomas Creek Arena, It used to be called Thomas Creek, and before the bridge was replaced there, the old bridge that they had, they put some fencing on there to keep pedestrians off of it, and that fencing ended up in the canal, and you could not see it until the canal was emptied. So you would have gotten impaled by the post for that.
Very good
if you would
point.
Have jumped in from that bridge.
It's a good safety tip. Thank you.
Let's just go out on a limb and say don't swim in the canal. Notwithstanding Scott's stories or my trying to be friendly.
I wouldn't do it today.
I think it's probably just a good idea to boat and
I'm loving Scott's story.
Buy some of that beer.
But Robert, I know you also wanted to ask about the sand patch. Is that right?
Yeah. One of the problems with the canal is actually paying for the canal because it has huge operational costs and has very little revenue. And I was kind of curious early in the conversation to find out that Cornhill Navigation is a nonprofit. So the Sam Patch is technically a nonprofit. I've been on it before. It has wine cruises, it has spirit cruises, and things like that. And I'm kind of curious how it's a nonprofit and if the Colonial Bell in Fairport is also a nonprofit.
I do not know how to answer the Colonial Bell question, but I can explain Cornhill Navigation. And that is because every year we take thousands of fourth graders on educational cruises. And when we were downtown with the Mary Jemison, we took every single Rochester City School District fourth grader on probably their very first boat ride and their introduction to the historic waterways. And the edutainment that we do, which would include wine tastings and distillery tastings, that helps fund what we can provide for the children. And if we were to charge the average consumer what it really costs to put them in that seat and take them on the canal, we would be pricing ourselves out of the business. So I want to thank everybody who buys a glass of wine and buys some beer on the Sand Patch because they're really making a difference for an important nonprofit.
Robert, you want to follow up there?
I just think, you know, I'm not sure if the Colonial Bell does the same thing. It may. I don't know for sure, but it just seems very much like a case of whack-a-mole where companies that actually profit from the canal have found a way to not actually pay kind of the freight, so to speak. And again, I think the problem with the canal going forward is actually paying for it. We have it under a state authority now that probably has some of the least transparent finances in the entire state. So I just think that there has to be a tighter line between who's on the canal and who's using the canal and who's paying for the canal.
Robert, thanks for the phone call. Brian, you want to weigh in on some of that? I mean, he's just wanting to make sure that people who are really using and benefiting from it are paying for it as much as they can. In other words, Robert's the kind of guy who just wants to make sure the fewest subsidies as possible. So,
Certainly all of the commercial operations on the canal, whether it's freight, whether it's the Colonial Bell or the Sam Patch, have a permit fee. So they are paying permit fees on a annual basis to the Canal Corporation. And, you know, I would just again point to the economic value, the tremendous tourism economic value of our canal system, not so much in what it produces in revenue, but what it provides. $400 million a year in tourism spending, water for hydropower, water for farms, commercial navigation. Those are tremendous assets. $6.3 billion a year in economic value.
All right, Robert, thank you for that. And what I want to do is rip through a couple other quick questions here before we start to wrap the conversation. Scott and Victor writes the following. He says, in September 2014, a friend and I kayaked the canal from the Niagara River to the Hudson River. I have traveled the world and experienced many exotic adventures, and the trip down the canal compares favorably to all of my other trips. After the trip, I contacted the office that oversees the canal and suggested that something akin to the A46ers designation, people who have reached the summit of all 46 high peaks in the Adirondacks, C35ers, I believe there are 35 locks. I offered to work with their office to make that happen. He wants to know if it's possible.
There's actually 57 locks, so let's make it C57. I think it's a great idea, and you should call us at 518-449-6001. And we can put you in touch with the person that would be the marketing manager.
That's Scott and Victor. If you hear from a Scott and Victor who contacted you through the Connections program, and that is a heck of a trip. We also had a call from Judy who wanted to know, why are there no winter festivals on the canal like ice skating, et cetera?
Oh, I can address that. Yeah. We did a hockey tournament a couple years in a row. We had an independent producer come in, and they were quite successful. We had, I think, one or two years in a row that were very successful because the weather was with us. But the weather is just an enormous variable, and it's not a sure bet. Other variables include what the levels of the canal are being kept at for various purposes each year. They may be higher or lower depending on maintenance operations. So there's a lot of factors that play into the viability of skating on the canal, and it's too much to risk. Festivals are very large investments. You have sponsors who have to be satisfied with the results as well as your public. So that's why, in a nutshell, it's just not the weather typically is too variable.
And Jack writes program and says, I'm a fan of experiential education, wondering if the SUNY school on your program does anything experiential or any educational use of the canal.
Absolutely. We're actually trying to explore more of that right now. We're talking to our history students and our computer science students about creating apps for working on the canal and finding out all that they can know. So we are continuing to look for opportunities for our students to live on the canal and work on the canal and learn on the canal.
All right, very good. Well, let me start with Heidi McPherson, the president of the College of Brockport, and we'll go around the table and just I want to hear what you guys think in 25 years. What should we expect in your various communities? What do you think the canal will look like if it's being used in the best possible way that's maybe a little different than today? What do you envision 25 years from now?
That is a great question. And we really see that the side of our campus that faces the canal is going to be a really vibrant side of the campus. We're going to have some more interpretive trails there. We're going to have other opportunities for students to sit and look at the canal and to have some opportunities for the arts along the canal.
Okay. Scott Winter, Executive Director of the Fairport Parent and Partnership for a Better Community. 25 years from now, what's it look like that it doesn't look like today?
Well, I think Fairport will continue its leadership role in terms of canal development concepts. The 48 market rate condos that are were recently built are almost all sold out. They're right on the canal where we repurposed an old village DPW site. For that. And you're going to see more of that, I think, in Fairport for certain.
More living there?
More people living along the water. They're not making a lot of new waterfront these days, so what there is being repurposed for residential living. And so I think you're going to see more of that in Fairport. Fairly safe bet. You'll see more entertainment related to it. But on the other hand, I would like to see more things. Having grown up on the canal in the 60s and 70s, there was still a decent volume of industrial freight-type traffic on the canal. It's a wonderfully efficient way to move large or bulk materials, large objects. I'd like to see more of that. I was struck by the irony of knowing what I saw when I was young and then seeing the hullabaloo over what was once routine happening. Mm-hmm. And I, for one, think that potential, hopefully, if our industrial base in the state improves, we may have more call for that type of use.
Okay. Beth Teal, Chair of Cornhill Navigation. 25 years from now, what's that the difference now? You've talked about the last 26 years and how things have already changed, but take me into the future.
Yeah, I think that today's millennials are so insistent and so good at creating a lifestyle that they want to enjoy, that as they move into greater maturity and they purchase homes along the canal or continue to rent downtown facing the canal, that they're going to craft their own uses. I think it will be a lot more user-friendly as you get closer to the city, and I think you'll have an energy that is missing in some of the more remote areas because these I admire the millennials so much because they know how to make change even though they're so young. So I'm looking forward to it. I'll come along with my walker and my wheelchair and enjoy what the millennials have done in 25 years.
And the director of the New York State Canal Corporation is Brian Stratton. I've got about 30 seconds. What's your vision for 25 years into the future in the canal?
Well, that's what Friday's all about. We hope to hear more of that, not only from the panelists, but from the guests. Certainly all of the things that have been said around the table. People want to be on the water. They want to live on the water. We want to look at opportunities to reimagine our canal, whether that means camping, canal tours, even canal cruise ships, not in the ship essence, but more in the river cruising. And we want to find more ways to bring what has been done so well here to other parts of our 524-mile canal system.
Well, that conversation continues Friday morning, 10 a.m. at the Strong Museum's Theater. It's open to the public. You can RSVP, nycanals200.com/Rochester. There are events, all kinds of things. The Sand Patch downtown at 4 and 6:30 on Friday, for example. If you want to take the family, and a lot more going on. So check out canal websites and events this weekend, this summer. Beth Teal, all of our Pittsford listeners, I've loved watching them just tweak every time you say Shane Place. That's the actual pronunciation,
that's
by the
correct.
Way.
Is the correct.
But they're
going to
say Shone Place, and you've just lit them up, and I've just really enjoyed that. In the same way I've watched Brian Stratton react to Scott Winter talking about scum jumping and swimming in the canal. Thank you all. We've had a great conversation. Travel well. Thanks to Rob Braden and Megan Mack. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you Wednesday.